Hello. Welcome to our verse-by-verse in-depth Bible study with Bible teacher Dr. Bob Utley. Now, here's Bob.
We're going to be in Exodus 20, verses 8 through 11 today. I want to take a little more time to do the historical development and a brief relationship to the New Testament for this commandment before I get into the text of Exodus 20 itself. This has caused a lot of problems in interpretation, and so I want to do a little more preparatory material, if you'd let me. It's obvious to me that this is related to the previous commands. God said this day is special. Now, because God said that day is special, then our attitude toward that day, like the three previous commands, shows our attitude toward God and His Word. And we are meant to follow that. Now, it seems to me that if we look at this in its larger context, that from, let's see if I can find the text, I had it right here, that from in Exodus 31, 12 through 17, you might want to look at that, that the Sabbath-like circumcision was a sign of the covenant, and their attitude was as crucial as the act. But the question comes, where did the idea of a seven-day week and the Sabbath come from? Well, that has been really a historically disputed item. The word Sabbath comes from the Hebrew word to cease, to be at rest, to cause to be still. It's not related at all to the word seven. Isn't that surprising? Now, going back in history, some have tried to go, since we don't have a lot of parallels to the Hebrew language, but we do have some cognate languages. They've tried to go to some of these other cognate languages and find words with similar sounds. Now, there's a very close one, a sapatu in Babylon. But it's an evil day. Now, the thing that's significant is there are certain evil days in these 30-day cycles. In Babylon, it was 7. Oh, that seems to fit. 14. Ooh, that seems to fit. 21. Wow. 28, looks like Babylon had a seven-day cycle. But they also had the 19th was a specially evil day in which no one did work. Well, that files up the sequence of seven. So we've had some questions about that. Besides, it's an evil day in Babylon and not a specially holy day. Now, the same is true in Canaan. They seem to have some seven-day cycles, but they were all evil. Now, the same is true of what's called the Kenite theory. There was a taboo related to the seventh day, an unlucky day. But again, this whole Kenite theory in Old Testament study is kind of dubious. That's, of course, what Jethro was, a Midianite, a Kenite. And I'm not sure we can base anything at all on that. And besides, it's an evil day, not a positive day. So I don't think there's any evidence at all. You see, you'd think it'd be related to the moon because the Old Testament people of God were on a lunar calendar. But 7 doesn't fit real well because there's about 29 and a half days in the cycle of the moon. And that doesn't fit real good. In Egypt, they had a 30-day calendar, but it was divided into three sets of 10. And that doesn't seem to fit at all. It's obvious when you look at the Bible that the Sabbath goes back, not only the term Sabbath to cease, but the 7-day cycle goes back to Genesis 2. Now, I'm not sure there was a whole lot of religious development about Genesis 2 until the time of Moses, but I am certain the children of Israel knew about the 6 days of creation and the seventh day God rested. Now, the question always comes up, how is the Sabbath related to the New Testament? Because it seems that the Sabbath, which, of course, is 6 p.m. Friday to 6 p.m. Saturday, the Jews begin in the evening and then the morning, because that's the way Genesis 1 creates. And the evening and the morning was the first day. And that's where they mark their time, beginning in twilight to the next twilight. So Sabbath is twilight on Friday to twilight on Saturday. Now, why do we worship on Sunday? Well, we must admit some of our Sunday stuff is historical development. But it also seems to me that Jesus put a new view on the Sabbath. And the place that I want to quote is 2. The Jews had made it such a hard and fast rule. Now, friends, that was their tendency to be literalistic, rule-oriented. So let me read you Mark 2:27, and the parallel is Matthew 12:8. And he said to them, this is his fight over the Sabbath with the Pharisees. The Sabbath was made to serve man, not man to keep the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even the Sabbath. I'm amazed at how often in the Gospels Jesus confronts the Pharisees over something like the Sabbath observance. I think he engineered confrontation with them to try to show them the true meaning of the law. So Jesus puts man above the rules connected with the Sabbath. Well, why did the church ever move toward a Sunday worship anyway? If you'll look at the parallel accounts of the post-resurrection appearances of Christ, you'll find a unique parallel. Jesus appeared to his disciples in the upper room the first Sunday night after his resurrection Sunday morning, and subsequently two Sunday nights in a row. It's almost like Jesus himself set the precedent with his appearance to his disciples. By the time of Paul's recording of the Lord's Supper in 1 Corinthians, he assumes the first day of the week was the worship day for the Christians in commemoration of Christ's resurrection. Now, I think it's significant that we realize that it was a work day until Constantine in the 300 ADs, and that Christians met before work or after work, and the big service was Sunday evening. Now, how different that is in our day. But there is some historical development about Sunday, but it's more that God is concerned with a periodic rest than he is this hour's versus that hour's. And I think the key is that this rest period is meant not only for man and cattle to relax, rest, but as a cycle of worship to remember our God. And I think that's very, very important. Okay, let me go to some exegetical insights on this. It's been somewhat difficult for me. My basic exegetical plan is usually to do historical background and then do a word study and a syntax study and a parallel passage. That's somewhat difficult in these Ten Commandments that have such few verses. This is the first that's positive. Remember in my introduction I said, it's kind of the Ten Commandments form a barrier about the outside of the covenant, and the two positive ones show what it's to be like on the inside. So it's the outer limits and the inner nature. Well, this is the first inner nature. It's the first positive one. And verse 12, honor your parents, will be the other one. I think that's very significant. Now, it starts out, remember the Sabbath day. Now, the word the Sabbath, I think, like first fruits and the tithe, is a Hebrew idiom to show that all of life belongs to God. Like the first one to break the womb, both of men and cattle, belonged to God. Exodus 13. Later became the Levites, took their place. But anyway, one son was given to God to show that all the children belonged to God. The tithe was given to God. Now, I personally think there were three tithes in the Old Testament on different years for different purposes. But the tithe was not meant to say, now God gets one-tenth and I get nine-tenths. But the tithe meant all of my money and resources belong to God. Well, the Sabbath, coming so regularly, I think, says the same thing. It's not that one day out of seven belongs to God. It's that all days belong to God. And that's a very important truth that I think we must see. This is one of the first commandments where the parallel in Deuteronomy 5 is significantly different. In Exodus, the background for why we should have a Sabbath is creation, that God rested on the seventh day. But in Deuteronomy 5, it's not creation at all, it's the Exodus. And so I think we can see very quickly that that's a radical difference. One of them focused theologically, excuse me, I got a cold. The other one focused domestically. I was interested when I noticed the parallel in Exodus 16:23 and Exodus 16:29. It seemed to fit both sides of this. Exodus 20 seems to be more theologically based, which fits Exodus 16:23. While Deuteronomy 5 seems to be much more practically based, much more domestically based. It's kind of Moses preparing them on the plains of Moab to enter the promised land and for a settled community. And it reflects more Exodus 16:29, more social. Now, it's obvious when you read Exodus 20 and Deuteronomy 5 that they're meant to be the same. There's been a theory among scholars The Ten Commandments were originally very short and very succinct and all negative. Now, if that's true, you do have some parallels of other places in the Mosaic legislation that this type of command about the Sabbath is given in very brief form. And I want to give you the positive ones first and the negative ones. Here are the biblical parallels. Exodus 23:13, Exodus 31:15, Exodus 34:21, Leviticus 23:3. Now here's a negative aspect of the command. Put in the negative now. Exodus 20:7, Leviticus 23:7, Jeremiah 17:27. And we learned from Exodus 31:14 that to violate this command meant death. Oh my. Now, the reason I think that we can somehow link Exodus and Deuteronomy together. The Jews have a tradition that the Exodus occurred on a Sabbath. Now, in Exodus, the emphasis is going to be on creation, while in Deuteronomy, it's going to be on the Exodus, right? That's the main event. But since the Exodus is done on a Sabbath, you see how both of them could go together. The term remember is a very significant form in its Greek syntax or grammatical structure. It's an infinitive absolute, which really makes it stronger than an imperative. Now, in Deuteronomy 5, it has the word observe, and here it has the term remember. But I think they are parallel, and I think they both point to the significance of man hearing and doing what God says. There is only one earlier reference to the Sabbath besides Genesis 2, and that's in Exodus 16:22-23, and you might want to look that up. Okay, and the second little phrase, keep it holy. Remember the Sabbath to keep it holy. The reason it's holy is because God said it was. The reason the tree of the knowledge of good and evil will kill you is because God said it would. The reason that in Leviticus, the thing the women drank in case the husbands thought they committed adultery was not that it was poison. It was because they believed it was poison. What am I saying? Because God's name was involved in the promise they made, they hadn't lied. What am I trying to say? It's God setting it apart that makes it holy, not there's anything holy even of itself. Most of the words that are related to holy, kadosh in Hebrew and hagios in Greek, things and people and places become holy as they are connected to God. I guess the way of the seventh day, it's holy because God chose it to be holy. Now, he set it apart for his use. The word holy seems to be set apart for God's unique use. Holiness is an attribute only of God. Now, it says, 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. Man, in Genesis, was to keep the garden before sin ever entered the world. So that tells me that work, per se, is not evil. But one of the results of man's listening to his wife and rebelling against God's obvious command to him was that the ground was cursed, Genesis 3:17-19. The Sabbath, being a day of rest for man and animals, was a way of giving man a periodic relief from this curse placed on the land, which says, by the sweat of your brow, you'll eat all the days of your life. It's God's cyclical rest for man, where man focused back in on the worshiping of God. It may seem surprising to us, but up until Leviticus 23:3, the Sabbath was not specifically designed as a worship feast day. Now think about that. You mean from Genesis 2, it doesn't automatically say that man should worship God on the Sabbath? No, it doesn't. The instructions about the Sabbath are given to Moses. When he tells them, because God rested, that means we're to worship and not rest. We're to emulate his activity. Now, I'm going to get to in a minute. God didn't need to rest. He rested for us. He knows that we are but dust. So God's going to set the pattern for us. And I think that's very, very holy. Now, important for us. The idea of a Sabbath as being a feast day is important. Do you ever watch The Fiddler on the Roof, where this man dances in his barn to the Lord. Poor. His daughters are going every way he doesn't want to. He's worried about life. He's about to get kicked out of his country. But the man has a relationship with God that causes life to be joyful. I don't know where in the world in Protestantism we got the black hat syndrome. Maybe it came from our Puritan forebears or something. But we've turned Sunday into a sour pickle contest instead of a praise to God. Oh, that we could catch the joy of Sabbath feast again. All of Israel's worship days were feast, 6 of them, except the Day of Atonement that was a contrition fast day. But all the rest were party days. Oh, I hope you know how to party with your God. It's as important that we know how to party with Him as it is that we know how to repent and pray with Him. We've missed that somehow. We've turned religion into some rule-oriented, nitpicking, frown party. Wasn't meant to be that way. The Sabbath was a festival occasion. Now, let's see. Okay. But the seventh day is a Sabbath of the Lord your God. I would think that what man needs more than anything is not a periodic rest day, though that is certainly helpful, especially if you're a very intense laborer, be it with your mind or with your body, or if you have to work long, long hours and have to do family too. But what we need more than anything is God. And a weekly Sabbath is a way to regularly meet God. Now, I hope you meet Him more than that in personal devotion, but Sunday, that special day where the people of God gather, not just a family, not just an individual, but the people of God gather together to say thank you, to be with Him. And we need that so much. I have a note here that says, weekly worship is a practical aid for promoting public worship. Notice the use of the covenant title Yahweh and the personal term Your. Part of being the covenant people is that we regularly come to Him according to His will in the way He chose to make us different from the surrounding unbelievers. It was this emphasis on the weekly worship that helped Israel survive. Now, what do I mean by that? Not only the exile, when she went down to Egypt, the Egyptians were kind of aloof. And Israel, being clannish, helped them survive that. Now, later on, when they were taken into captivity by Babylon, the synagogue on a weekly basis is what continued to give a historical continuity for those many years in exile while in Babylon. It will do the same for the church today. It'll give us a sense of identity. And many people say, well, I can worship God out in the forest and trees. Well, sure you can, because God made them. But it's important that you worship God with His people. You haven't been given a spiritual gift. It's important you function in the life of the church with that spiritual gift. We need one another. And it shall not do any work, or your son or your daughter, or your male servant or your female servant, or your cattle, or your sojourner who stays with you. This concept of no work is interesting to me. The idea of a rest, if you look at the book of Hebrews, chapter 3 and 4, you'll find the word rest is used in three ways. It's used of the Sabbath rest of God, Genesis 2. It's used of the rest of the promised land. And it's used of being with God in heaven. Now, if you miss those three uses in Hebrews 3 and 4, you're going to badly misinterpret that part of that book. Now, when I look at this idea of rest, I think it's significant that that we worship God. It's a constant reminder of God's forgiveness and salvation to us. Think about that. God has built in a way that we can come to Him and say, thank you. I also was interested when it mentions cattle. Now, Deuteronomy adds ox and ass. Exodus just has cattle. You mean God's really concerned with cattle resting? I think He is. Now, cattle, we learn from Achan, and that's in Joshua 7, verses 15 and 24. The cattle were killed. Achan's cattle were killed along with Achan when he sinned about taking something holy out of Jericho. Well, I can see how his wife might have been a duplicitous partner in that. And I could even see how his kids may have known and not told. But why did his cattle have to be stoned? Because they were part of that man's family of faith. And as being part of the family of faith negatively there in Joshua 7, here positively. You know, in Genesis chapter 8, verse 1, and in Jonah chapter 4, verse 11, and I think in Deuteronomy 5, parallel 2, God's concerned about animals. He's concerned they have a rest. Now, I'm not saying go out and join your Audubon Society as worshiping God. Please, don't get too radical. I'm not saying Ducks Unlimited are a spiritual thing. But I am saying that God cares about the animals. There's a passage, I forgot where it is. I think it's Job, where it says, God played with Leviathan. I think God loves creation, and I think it grieves him when sinful man abuses it. I still think so much of Isaiah 6, I think it's verse about maybe 6 through 11, where it talks of a new day where man and animals will again be joined with God in a garden setting. I'm looking forward to that. God cares about the animals. Now, the phrase "who stays with you" is literally within your gates. The gate, of course, of ancient cities was the place where the elders of that city met. It's a place of justice. It came to be used as a metaphor, not only for the place of justice, but also as a synonym for the whole city, because the gates were what protected a city. So what this means is the people who either are indentured to us as servants, hired servants, those who are staying with us who are foreigners, or whoever we happen to be entertaining, be them servants or friends, they also must rest on the Sabbath. Why? Because they are among the covenant people. And the covenant people do things differently. And everything the covenant people do is connected to worship. Because that's the kind of God that saved us. And this is the kind of thing that calls us to remember it. Okay. For 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that's in them. This is obviously linked back to Genesis 1 and 2. In Exodus 20, creation is the backdrop. As I've said before, in Deuteronomy 5, it's the Exodus, which shows these commands can change to some extent and be relevant to at different cultures and different times. I think that's significant. We see that. That's what makes these things adaptable to our culture, is the universal truth applied to our day. Could I use this as a proof text to back up 6 24-hour days of creation? Well, I feel comfortable with 6 days of creation, personally. I'm more conservative, I guess, in the early part of Genesis. But I realize the sun and moon weren't made to the third day. And that the word yom, most often, great majority of the time means a period of night and dark, but can mean longer periods of that, even early in Genesis, like Genesis 5:2, I believe. So therefore, I would not say this makes a proof text, this little verse here, 6 days, means that God had to do it in 6 days. I think it's just a normal way of speaking about the creation that's put into daily cycles. And he rested on the seventh day, therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath and made it holy. The Lord rested and blessed it, not for his sake, but for our sake. I was reading Rashi on this. He said one way you know the Lord blessed it, because he gave double manna for that day. Well, that's true. But it's kind of like God set it apart to teach man a lesson, that man needs God, that man needs worship. And you know what? Really, man, wherever we find him, anthropologically speaking, is terribly religious and needs something to worship. I also think it's important, we talk about the seventh day rest, God blessed it. God didn't need to rest because he was tired, did he? Jesus, many things that Jesus did, like his baptism, he did an example for us. I think this is something that God did. And I think as God was an example to us, going to Deuteronomy 6 now, 6 through 9, we are to be an example to our children. How we treat the Sabbath says something about what we think about God. If we pass on a sense of reverence, not dogmatic rules. I used to have a preacher friend who said, 12:01, I can go fishing on Sunday night. Well, if he was being Jewish, he could have gone at 6 p.m. right on Sunday night. I don't think that it's kind of like tithing. Do you tithe the gross, the net, the I don't think that's the issue. The issue is a reverence toward God. Reverence toward God with our possessions. Reverence toward God with our family. Reverence toward God with the days we labor and serve, make a living. It's an attitude of life. We pass it on to our kids. Now, we could either pass on a negative, rule-oriented, or we can pass on a loving, joyful, festive occasion, but it is reserved for God. We can be nitpicking and have 39 rules of ways of what's work and how you can do it and what you can't do. Or we can try to convey to our kids, this is a special day because we have a special God. And we want to do things special here because He's been so special to us. If we can catch that, I think we'll have the essence of this commandment. And whether you start at 6 p.m. on Friday or daylight on Sunday is not the real issue. But it's the reverence, the periodic, regular reverence and worship of the God who loved us and made us and called us out of darkness and made us His children through His Son. I've enjoyed being with you. I'll see you again, same time, same place, next week. May the Lord bless you real good.